Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. The Missouri legislative session is now in the books with, depending on your point of view, lots of hits and misses. Gun rights and taxes were high on the agenda, as were perennials such as abortion and voter photo IDs, and, of course, much, much more. And there are indications Governor Nixon is sharpening his veto pen. I'm Don Morris, joining me to take stock of the session. Joe Manis, political reporter for the St. Louis Beacon. Terry Jones chairs the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And Marshall Griffin is St. Louis Public Radio's Capitol correspondent in Jefferson City. That's where he is. Marshall, we welcome you and the others as well. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for asking me.
Let's be. I think I started this way last time, but it was so much fun. We'll try it again. I'll start with Marshall. Marshall, give me your headline on the just concluded session.
Well, I would say the headline is this. Governor declares a C, lawmakers declare an A. It's a differing view of what happened. Tim Jones basically declared it a historic session. To hear him at the end of the wrap-up Friday night, you would think that the House Republicans got a slam dunk on everything that they had asked for throughout the session. Of course, Governor Nixon had a quite different view of that. He did praise lawmakers for getting the second injury fund fixed through and for raising funding for K-12 schools, but had a lot of negative comments as far as what they spent time on, as opposed to what the governor thought they should have spent time on, which is namely Medicaid expansion, which went absolutely nowhere.
All right. Thank you for that extended headline, Marshall. Now, Joe, let me ask the same of you.
Guns, and more guns. Yeah, I think it was definitely all about guns. And that affected a lot of other stuff that they were doing, because the General Assembly spent a good 6 weeks to 2 months enmeshed in this whole issue of what was going on with the scanning of documents, including concealed carry permits, having to do with the driver's license changes, which really go back to last fall, but they really became aware of it during the session. And everything seemed to be connected to that. Because they were obsessed about the guns, they really went after the Department of Motor Vehicles, tried to get them to change the license process. They cut the budget for the Department of Motor Vehicles in one of the budget bills. Then they got enmeshed in this thing of not funding some early childhood development programs, but funding some senior programs, putting them in the same bill, wanting the governor to choose. It was just it was because they were upset over this other thing. He just vetoed the whole bill, so then they're scrambling at the end to try to fix it, because the legislators really don't want to be on the outs with either the senior groups or the early childhood groups. And so there was just a lot of the fights that went on. It all came back to guns, the fight over guns. And he does have four bills dealing with guns on his desk, everything from a bill that calls for Missouri to ignore every federal gun law and to make it illegal if anybody tries to enforce any of those gun laws, to a bill that allows state employees to have guns in their cars in the state parking lots as long as it's not visible.
What about, we heard early on that there was going to be an attempt to chastise any legislator who proposed legislation, gun control legislation?
Well, nobody really did. I mean, I think there was a few legislators from the St. Louis area who talked a little bit about it off the floor, but because the majority was so whipped up over it, some of the Democrats opted to focus on other things. Like, they had this big vigil Thursday night over the they knew the Medicaid expansion wasn't going anywhere, but they put up 1,500 candles on the steps of the Capitol to represent the number of deaths that the some medical groups say will occur in Missouri every year involving people who don't have insurance. So they had that visual there the night before. So there was other things they did. They kind of decided just to let the gun people go and didn't really challenge them too much.
Terry Jones, your headline.
Politics of distraction, taking issues like guns and thumbing our nose at the federal government while we don't have a pragmatism to overcome our ideology. or some ideological objections about taking $900 million that can help people be more healthy and also help the state of the economy at the same time.
Yeah, I guess we're talking the Medicaid expansion proposal that, as is indicated, didn't go anywhere. Terry, let me ask you about this with regard to the guns. Doesn't federal law still trump state law?
Yeah, there's a thing called the supreme law. It's in the Constitution.
Right.
Nullification, we tried that. It's called the Civil War. But we're still fighting that in one way or another in Missouri over 150 years after the war. The Civil War supposedly settled it.
All right. Marshall, how much discussion was given to that part of that particular that particular gun issue?
A good bit. I'd say April was probably the gun month as far as the debate goes. you had a very large Second Amendment rights rally, I believe, the few days after April 15th.
Yeah.
And you know, oddly enough, all this timed with the tragedy at the Boston Marathon, which is different issue, obviously, but the timing of it was just really interesting that all of this just came down during the month of April. You know, all these Second Amendment right bills and debates in the House, and a little bit in the Senate, but this was mostly in the Missouri House where this turf battle was going on over gun control versus Second Amendment rights. And you know, some people might think, you know, what a coincidence, or perhaps not so, that it happened during the month of April, which is, you know, if you go back to 1775, that's when the Battle of Lexington and Concord, starting off the Revolutionary War, took place. The month of the Branch Davidian, assault. It's the month of the Oklahoma City bombing. You know, it's how many people view those as coincidence, or perhaps planned timing to send some kind of message to someone.
Terry Jones, how do you think the governor came out of this? I mean, he has to walk, obviously, a very fine line.
He does, because he has majorities of Republicans in both houses, of so-called veto-proof majorities, although we'll test that probably in September. And so there's only so much he can accomplish. But he did put a lot of weight behind the Medicaid expansion. He helps assemble a very impressive coalition between business and labor and the hospitals and the other health care providers. But that coalition was not able to make much headway. Indeed, everybody acknowledged that Medicaid expansion was dead over a month ago.
Yeah, well, I think the governor, as usual, was somewhat – he always has been very careful. For example, at his closing news conference on Friday, reporters were pressing him on a grade – or how he would rate it, and he refused to do it. He just kind of hemmed and hawed. And whereas the Democrats in the House and Senate, of course, claimed that it was an absolute failure, I think that the governor is, Professor Jones said, he wants to walk a fine line so that if there's some things where there's obvious agreement that they can maybe work together. I think he also, though, is mindful of his legacy and whatever his future political aims are, because he's now, you know, second term. He's looking ahead. So I think he's trying to bolster his Democratic bona fides on a national level. I personally think that he knew from the get-go that the Medicaid expansion would be very difficult to get this Republican legislature, which is extremely conservative. This isn't just Republicans. These are conservative Republicans to go along with this. But he continued to press on anyway. But I think he's looking at how it looks nationally, thinking maybe they would come under pressure from other Republicans elsewhere, since there's other states where they are doing it, including Arkansas, where they're coming up with this unusual crafting of a way to get the money. But I think he knew that it was going to be heavy lifting and that it probably wouldn't happen. So, and from that standpoint, in some ways, I thought he was more, I don't know if shrewd's the right word, but he was definitely spending a lot of time during the session kind of figuring out things and how to do things without making it obvious that he was doing anything. Unlike Bob Holden, who was always out front and in trouble with the legislature, Nixon usually isn't. He doesn't say much.
And if I can jump in right there, the governor also said Friday that that he would be pursuing Medicaid funding next year as well. He said there's still 100% coverage out there, and he plans on continuing to pursue it next year. So this, as Joe was saying, this, this could definitely play into continuing to raise his Democratic stock on a national level, especially if he continues to push next year and comes back and says, well, look, it is starting to work in Arkansas. See what's going on there, and we need to be doing that here. I think we will definitely see the governor making more trips around the state campaigning for Medicaid expansion in 2014.
And once the Obama administration pulled the uncompensated care out as a threat for this year, that took one of the arrows out of his quiver,
right,
out of the governor's quiver, and took less of a crisis or emergency argument against the proposal, particularly rural hospitals that would be threatened if we did not expand Medicaid.
Marshall, he still has veto power in that quiver. Do you anticipate some vetoes come September or before?
We might see. I'm not going to say there will be more vetoes than usual, but I would be surprised if there were not more vetoes than he's normally given out, percentage-wise and certainly numerically. I think we can expect the tax cut bill to be vetoed. There will be some line item budget vetoes, and I have to double check whether or not House Bill 19, the capital improvements bill, is technically a budget bill. If it is, I think that might be subject to line item vetoing, which might mean goodbye to the new MoDOT office building.
I think I'm almost positive it is, because they added it as an amendment to the budget.
Yes,
and okay. I could be wrong, but I think they did. Because the governor keeps making these jabs at that $38 million building, which is the...
Which he didn't ask for.
Which, yeah. Now, Jones has maintained from the get-go that there was a deal that day, the day that they introduced it. But I think that perhaps because of some of this fight over Department of Motor Vehicle funding and some other stuff, that the governor is getting some pressure from some Democrats to, quote, teach him a lesson and to cut out that building, even though some Democrats say they actually would be beneficial. This is a building that's next to the Capitol, and it's privately owned, and the state now spends money to house a bunch of Department of Transportation employees. And what some House Speaker Jones and some others want to do is buy the building, move them elsewhere. Department of Transportation is looking at somewhere else anyway, and then move a lot of state employees that are in the Capitol into the office building. And it's $38 million to do all that. Now, they claim after 10 years, the state actually saves money. But again, this is a thing where the last week or two, the governor was sticking little jabs about it. So in almost several of his comments or in his little messages. So there's a hint that he might knock it out just to say, look, you guys were, accusing me all this stuff all session and cutting the budget and Department of Motor Vehicles and stuff, so I'm not going to approve this $38 million. So we'll see what happens with that.
We have to take a break. We'll do that now. Continue our conversation about the just-concluded Missouri State Legislature. It ended at 6 o'clock on Friday. With me in studio, Joe Manis, from whom you just heard. She's with the St. Louis Beacon. That's sdlbeacon.org, by the way. Should read it. Jason Rosenbaum, her colleague, has a nice piece today on the veto potential, by the way. Also with me in studio is Professor Terry Jones of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And joining us from his digs down in Jefferson City is Marshall Griffin, St. Louis Public Radio's Capitol correspondent. Back to continue our conversation, and if you'd like to get into this discussion, we'd love to have you. What did the legislature do or not do for you? Let us know at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us a tweet at STLNair, or you can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the just-concluded legislative session here in the state of Missouri. I have with me in studio Joe Manis, political reporter for the St. Louis Beacon, Terry Jones, a political scientist at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and from Jefferson City, Marshall Griffin, St. Louis Public Radio's Capitol correspondent. Joe and Marshall, along with the Beacon's Jason Rosenbaum and our own Chris McDaniel, will be participating in a discussion of the legislative session tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock right here at Umselet Grand Center, and you're invited to attend. Another interesting conversation on what has just transpired. What about the paycheck deduction? I think Jason's piece this morning indicated that might be looking at a veto.
Yeah, that probably will be vetoed. In part because, just to explain what it was,
yeah.
There was various versions of it, but what passed and went to the governor's desk is a bill that bars unions from doing automatic deduction from public employees' paychecks unless they get an annual permission from each employee to have that deduction, and they also have to get permission for any of the money to be spent for political purposes. Now, for public employee unions, the unions have said, well, we've had to do that from the get-go, the second part, that they just can't be willy-nilly spending money on political stuff. The General Assembly did approve that, but in the House, the vote was under 90. It was like 80. My memory, if it's right, was like 86 to 59 or something like that. So they need 109 votes to override a governor's veto. So that sort of total, even though there was an override in the Senate, the override numbers, they need 23 votes, and it was either 23 or 24 on that bill. The fact that the House was 23 votes short, for the governor, that probably will be an easy one because, A, he's close to the unions. They gave him a lot of money when he ran for reelection and the first time, so he can make them happy and be satisfied that the chances of the House overriding it are slim. One of the reasons is because there was the side fight over the police in Kansas City. See, the aim was to exempt police and firefighters from this, which raises some legal issues if you're requiring this of public employees, but except for them. But there's also some legislators in Kansas City area who are trying to get more restrictions on the Kansas City police because of a fight going on over there, a labor fight. And so I predict that the governor will probably veto it, and that may very well not be overridden.
Harry.
This is just one skirmish in a larger war between the business interests in the state and labor that includes things like prevailing wage and ultimately right to work. So you want to win every skirmish you can to send a signal that don't try a further step that has more drastic implications for labor unions. And the governor, as Joe has already outlined, is likely to win a veto of this, that is to say, not have it be overridden in September.
Marshall, were you surprised by the fact that the legislature did not pass some sort of voter ID proposal?
Maybe just a little bit, because they've been trying to get this passed for years and years, and it gets out of the General Assembly pretty much every year. So perhaps the Department of Revenue's document scanning controversy kind of took the spotlight off of voter ID. Now, it wasn't totally forgotten. Over in the Senate, the threat of bringing up the voter ID legislation was used to get Democrats to sit down on a filibuster. And I'd have to look back to see which particular filibuster that was, because there were so many this year.
filibusters.
But the voter ID, the threat of voter ID legislation getting pushed through was, that was probably the highlight of it this year, is used as a threat.
You know, there's another kind of a surprise, I guess, to me, and that was Terry Jones, the proposal to establish drug courts in Missouri. And I know they want to do that and do this in the city of St. Louis, making courts specific to gun crimes. Your thoughts on that?
Well, they've been very successful around the country, and to the extent that we've had them in Missouri, they've also been having a powerful impact. So it seems like it would be a bipartisan issue to make that happen, but even things that seem bipartisan, like a $1 billion bond issue to improve infrastructure in the state, where you get people saying good things about it, when it gets down to the details of the legislation, gets bogged down in a very polarized legislature.
Yes, I think that that was one of the issues that, for one reason, I think rural legislators, they weren't necessarily opposed to it, but they just, when they got caught up in other issues, it just kind of went away. But also because of the focus on gun rights, there were some who wanted to look at this more closely. They wanted to make sure that it wasn't unfairly incurring on the Second Amendment, which was a big one. Just to give you a quick example, Friday at the closing press conference, Speaker Tim Jones, who's from the St. Louis area, was talking about something unrelated and the importance of the First Amendment, but then he made some comment that the First Amendment had some restrictions on it because somebody asked him about something. And then somebody, one of the reporters, shouted out, yeah, but you're not accepting any restrictions on the Second Amendment. Uh-huh. And so then he was mentioning of how the Second Amendment was so important. So in some ways, the whole issue was anything that had to do with guns, if it wasn't trying to expand gun rights, the legislators just kind of ignored it.
And that's why your headline was guns, guns, guns.
Yes.
At least that's part of the reason why. But Marshall, I guess Missourians don't have to worry about having Sharia law imposed in any of the court cases in the near future or distant future.
No, they don't.
What are they thinking? Terry, what are they thinking?
They're having easy wins, doing things symbolically to show how tough they are. The senator that sponsored that and pushed it through the legislature has been doing that for some time now. But he has a lot of company, and so it's a substitute for real action.
But you're
scoring political points rather than making public policy.
But you know, it goes back to the whole amount of time that the legislature has been spending on national issues over the past 3 or 4 years.
It's
a part of that.
Yeah. Well said.
Are there no legislators either here or in Washington who aren't thinking only of the next election, Joe?
Yes. Okay. In fact, I think this is this other fight that we haven't touched on yet, was the fight within the Republican ranks, especially in the state Senate, on various issues that actually ended up killing a couple issues that were important to the St. Louis area the final week. And one of the stars in that was State Senator John Lamping, who's from Ladue and a Republican, narrowly won back in 2010, is up for reelection in 2014. He won't say whether he's running for reelection, but there's some suspicions about it, about whether or not he is, because of his role in 2 major filibusters the last week that got the RCGA and some other business groups here up in arms. The first one was he helped lead the fight to kill the proposed transportation sales tax that the business groups around the state, but especially in the St. Louis area, wanted to get on the 2014 ballot to ask voters to approve this 1 cent hike for 10 years, and it was going to be used to widen Highway 70 and also do some local road and bridge improvements around the state. And the second one was the almost annual fight over state tax credits. There was once again an effort to reduce historic and low-income tax credits, which are used a lot in the St. Louis area. But there also was an effort to create some new tax credit programs. This year was different in that you had Mayor Slay down there actually saying he was okay with a reduction of being about a third in historic tax credits if they would create some of these other tax credit programs they wanted. And the bottom line was, Lamping was part of a group that killed that too. And the last few days, there was a lot of focus on that, so much so that some of the business groups in the St. Louis area launched a robocall effort into his office. So his phones were ringing constantly with people telling him, actually using rather blunt terms, according to him, what they thought of him. And these were all people from the St. Louis area, or business people, and saying they weren't going to support him or weren't going to give him money or whatever. But Lamping said it was the issue. He's a small government person. He doesn't believe that there should be higher taxes, and he doesn't believe in the tax credit programs, period. And he was going to be sticking to his guns. And so he became rather a symbolic figure the last few days. But he did, I think, though, he had a couple pet bills of his own that he wanted to get through, and those died at the end. And the theory was that it was because some fellow senators wanted to
payback time.
Yeah, payback time. Exactly.
Terry, if anybody wants to give any candidate money in the state of Missouri, they can give them pretty much as much as they want, can't they?
Anybody who is a citizen of the United States can give about as much money as they want. And there's no caps, no limits. Again, that was a non-starter, even though the governor stressed it in the State of the State address. It went nowhere. And now the governor, who said in that State of the State address, if it didn't go anywhere in the General Assembly, he would personally get involved in an initiative petition drive to put it on the ballot in 2014. We'll see whether or not that happens.
Before I go to the phones, Marshall, while we're talking politics, there was a bill that was passed concerning a change in our elections here, primary elections. What went on there?
Well, it was actually a pretty wide-ranging bill. It included a lot of different things. It would change the presidential primary race from the first Tuesday following the first Monday in February to that same day in March. So that's trying to solve a problem that that goes back a couple of years and almost may have cost Missouri some delegates. I'm not sure if that actually happened or not, but it did that. It also moved the lieutenant governor's race, actually making it a special election if the lieutenant governor vacates office instead of having the governor having the authority to appoint. And there's been some question as to whether or not the governor has the authority to appoint a new lieutenant governor if he leaves office. And this was back when Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder was in the running to be picked by Republicans in Southeast Missouri to try to replace Joanne Emerson. Of course, Jason Smith snagged that nomination and not the lieutenant governor, so it kind of became a moot point, as well as the setting of the special election date in June after the session was over. But that's the two main things that the elections bill had. And I believe it also had something in St. Louis as far as making one of the positions appointed as opposed to elected.
The public administrator.
The public administrator, which was something that Slay wanted. But two things. One thing it did and one thing it didn't, because there were various bills. There had been a proposal to move the Missouri's primary from August to June. And that ended up actually, that was one of Lamping's proposals, but it ended up dying in part because some legislators pointed out that this would just be a few weeks after the session ended, and for incumbents, they wouldn't have enough time to campaign, which I thought was rather intriguing. And the other thing is that in the election bill, one of the election bill that ends up on the governor's desk, it has a provision that bars any recess appointments to the St. Louis County Election Board. Now, the way it's worded, it only applies to St. Louis County's Election Board, not to any of the others, and it's because certain Republican leaders who are from the St. Louis area are still irked over what happened last summer when the Republican elections director, former Judge Joe Gokey, was ousted from the board. This all happened during the recess, and they're still upset about that, and I won't get into all the ins and outs, but they want to make that more difficult to happen again. And I thought it was fascinating, this far-reaching election bill, there was this little provision, and it only applies to St. Louis County.
My. Let's let's go to the phones. We have some very patient callers. Barbara will join us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hey, thank you, Don. It certainly was one of the strangest sessions I've ever witnessed. I was wondering if the panel thought that Tim Jones would be coming back as speaker again.
Marshall, let's send that one your way.
Oh, definitely. He's got only one more year left in office before he's term limited out. And the only reason I think that he would voluntarily leave office is if he wanted to spend time campaigning for Attorney General or for Secretary of State, you know, something like that.
And even then, he would have two more years after 2014 for any of the offices up in 2016.
Yeah, everybody thinks he's running for Attorney General, although so are a couple state senators.
Right. Yeah, I don't see Tim Jones leaving office a year early.
All right. Thank you, Marshall. Let's bring in Mike calling from St. Louis. Mike, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering why no one's talked about an initiative being proposed for Medicaid expansion. Is it polling badly, or is there something else that's keeping people from talking about that?
Joe?
Well, I think that it hasn't been raised, which is rather surprising considering that people are always talking about initiative petitions and other stuff. Mm-hmm. For example, there's been talk that the business leaders may have to finance an initiative petition to get that transportation tax I mentioned on the ballot. But part of it's the cost. I'm figuring that a lot of it's the cost, because the hospital groups and others would have to come up arguably with millions to pay for the field operation to get enough signatures to get it on the ballot. I mean, I'm not saying it wouldn't happen. I'm just saying that right now there hasn't been that much talk about it. I think they were hoping that there would be enough pressure on the legislature that somehow they would act.
In addition to the cost, which would run into the millions, it would be on the ballot. It would be on the November 2014 ballot. So that would mean it's still one more year for Medicaid expansion not to occur. you have a shot at it in the next General Assembly session that would then make it happen earlier.
Well, they're certainly aware of their election dates, obviously, and paid close attention during this session. Let's take another call. And Arnie and O'Fallon, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Don and the panel. I kind of have to chuckle. I'm a Republican from St. Charles County, and the legislature talks about intrusion of the federal government and forcing mandates on state government without funding sources and other things. And that came out in this legislative system. But HCS, House Bill 345, deals with telecommunication towers. And the state legislature basically thumbed their nose at local government, county and local governments, and said, hey, we want you to get out of the business of local control of your zoning and planning regulations. And it takes away neighborhoods from testifying before the planning and zoning process of a 150-foot telecommunication cell phone tower going in their neighborhood. And I just think it's comical because I testified before the Utility and the Commerce Committee of the Senate, and there were 10 people from the telecommunications highly paid lobbyists, and the senators and the House kind of like forget about the people where this is going to affect their property values. So there were resolutions that were passed by St. Charles County and other governments throughout the state saying, hey, you can't trample on our local zoning and planning rights.
Another example of that was the legislature overturning the foreclosure mediation that's occurring in the city of St. Louis and St. Louis County by withdrawing their authority to do that.
And part of this represents, to be blunt, the political power and the political bucks of some major groups that included the bankers and the the wireless mobile phone industry. Both bills passed with rather large margins. If my memory is correct, I'm almost positive that both passed by well over the veto-proof majorities in the House as well as the Senate. And so whether or not the governor vetoes them, it's probably a likelihood that those will end up on the calendar in September and that the House and Senate will be confident that they can override, especially if the lobbyists for both of those industries are in the halls and being very generous.
And political science 101 here. We have a federal system where both the national government and the state governments have sovereignty. The local governments have no sovereignty. They're creatures of the state.
Have to take another break. Do you want to weigh in on any of that, Marshall, or should I just go and take my break?
I think Joe and Terry did a great job on that.
Okay, great. We'll continue the conversation on the just-completed Missouri legislative session in just a moment. My guests in studio, Joe Manis and Terry Jones, Marshall Griffin, St. Louis Public Radio's man in Jefferson City, is there, and he's joining us by phone. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation in the aftermath of the Missouri legislative session, which ended on Friday. Terry Jones, as the educator in the group, how did education come out of this session?
Budgetarily, very good, compared certainly to previous sessions over the last 5 to 10 years, with increases both K through 12 and higher education that were in the 2% to 4% range. In terms of capital, though, there was a great deal of hope among higher education that the billion-dollar bond issue would pass. The state has excellent credit ratings, so the interest rates would be low. There was a general consensus that the projects are all needed. You would think it would be politically easy because there would have been projects in all parts of the state. The Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Republican, was for it. The President Pro Tem was for it. The governor was for it, and it didn't happen.
And to quote Tom Dempsey, he said, we just basically didn't have enough time to vet it. And a lot of the leaders have said this was a two-year process. It might take 2 years to examine the cost, everything that's needed before it can be passed. But, one has to wonder if they spent too much time on some other issues that maybe they could have gotten this one done this year.
You know, speaking of not enough time, I read, I guess, this morning about Jolie Justice's attempt to get gay rights on the floor, and that didn't happen within the last couple of minutes of the session. But apparently, Joe Manis, she's pretty happy that it got as far as it did.
Well, there were actually two bills. I wrote about it a couple weeks ago that dealt somewhat with gay rights. One in particular had to do with bullying, trying to include sexual orientation in the stuff that could be protected under the anti-bullying statute. That actually did get through the House at the end. I'm sorry, not the House, the Senate. So she was happy that at least it got a vote. The other one, which Promo and some other groups had been pushing, was to add sexual orientation to the various protected classes in the state, like gender and age and other things, when it deals with firings. Because now you can be fired just for if they find out that you're gay. And what's interesting is that this session there was over 60 legislators, including some Republicans, who supported it, saying that one of them in particular was State Rep Kevin Engler, a former state senator who's now in the House, who's from the Farmington area, who is conservative, and he says, and he had been one of the crafters of the ban against gay marriage that passed in Missouri in 2004, and he still supports a ban on gay marriage, but he says it's one thing to support a ban on gay marriage, it's another thing to allow people just to be fired because of their sexual orientation. So he was among the public supporters of adding that. Now, it didn't get anywhere, but to me, the fact that there was such a public thing with, as I said, these 60 legislators backing it, and there was videos that were crafted by the new Secretary of State, Jason Kander, State Treasurer Clint Zweifel, and Attorney General Chris Coster, who's running for governor in 2016. All of them did videos that were running on websites and stuff promoting the fact that they thought this should be added. And again, it didn't get anywhere, but the fact that it was so public indicates that this is something that might actually happen down the road. And I think that's why Justice, who is openly gay, was pleased about that, that there seemed to be the tone was changed.
The public opinion polls are very clear. Support for gay rights grows every year. Elected officials pay attention to public opinion polls. Being outright anti-gay now is not a good political strategy for a Republican or a Democrat in these types of actions. At least talking about it, getting it on the agenda are not surprising.
It's happening all over the country, obviously, but who'd have thought it just a couple of years ago in Missouri? Yeah,
no, if I can add to that, as far as an actual bill getting through that would add sexual orientation to the protected classes, I don't see that happening as long as Tim Jones is Speaker of the House.
Right.
He had actually answered a direct question to that and gave a fairly straightforward answer, saying, you know, I believe that that would create more of a burden as far as, you know, legal lawsuits against Missouri businesses, and that he was opposed to anything that would increase the likelihood of a Missouri business getting sued. And that was his reason for saying that he opposed adding sexual orientation to the state's protected classes. So I don't, unless he has a change of heart, I don't see that happening as long as he's House Speaker.
Let me go back to the potential for veto. And I don't think we discussed this particular issue earlier on, and that is the abortion legislation that passed with regard to the day after pill, I guess is what you call it.
Well, no, actually, this has to do with RU 46.
Yeah.
Because the morning after pills right now, because the federal law, I mean, people are supposed to, women are supposed to be able to purchase them over the counter.
Right.
Now, that may actually be important since there was a bill that was passed that will allow pharmacists not to stock some of this stuff if they don't believe in it. Now, the provision dealing with RU 46, and RU 46 is a drug that's taken in two doses that basically causes an early miscarriage. It's using medicines to have an abortion in the early stages. Right now, the woman goes to the physician and is in front of the physician when she takes the first dose. The second dose is taken at home because then that often begins the evacuation process of their womb. The law, the bill that was passed would require that they be in the doctor's office for that second dose. Now, there was a lot of spirited discussion about legislators shouldn't get involved in medical stuff. It was passed by a veto-proof majority. It's unclear what the governor is going to do on that. He has on some previous abortion-related bills, although technically he supports abortion rights, has allowed some things to go into law without his signature. Because in Missouri, the governor has three options. He can veto, he can sign, or he can allow it to come into effect without his signature. It's unclear what he's going to do with that one. I know that the abortion rights movement, Planned Parenthood, and others have been outspoken saying that this is kind of needless. But the outcry wasn't as strong as I thought. So I don't know if it's because they figure that maybe this one isn't as worth pushing on, if there's behind the scenes stuff going on, or if the federal changes, as you mentioned about over the counter of morning after pills, if that is changing the debate. I'm not quite sure.
And the governor knows on this issue, on issues dealing with abortion. The Democratic caucus in the House and the Senate is not unified. There are pro-life Democrats, and therefore he would need to convince some Republicans in order to counteract that influence. And so it's not an easy winner to sustain a veto.
Do you have any insight from you, Marshall?
Well, I will say this. If he does veto this particular bill, perhaps he would feel less pressure to let it become law. The two bills that he let become law without his signature happened before he was reelected. Now that he doesn't have to worry about being reelected to governor, maybe this might provide a little encouragement for him to actually veto the bill if he doesn't want it to become law and not have to fear too many repercussions on that front. But that's just my opinion.
Okay, well, let's take an email here from Jeff, and I'm not familiar enough with the legislation only by number, so maybe this has even come up. But could your guests address the, quote, thankfully failed education bill SB 125 and Senator Nasheed's confrontation with Representative Butler over the bill, as well as Rex Sinkfield's connection to it?
Well, 125, Marshall, you probably know more about this than I do. But this was a bill. There was some stuff that was stripped out of it, so it's not as onerous as some education groups had feared. But it does allow teachers in the city of St. Louis to be fired for incompetence. I mean, that's the wording that's being used.
And it speeds up the process.
Right, right. It does speed up the process. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the measures that had been sought by certain political interests in the city of St. Louis who are trying to improve the school district, and they believe that's one of the ways to do it. Now, teacher groups say no, that's not the way to do it. But the bottom line is there was some debate on this, but some of the more onerous provisions were stripped out.
The larger issue here is the force that we're supporting this legislation think it's too easy for K-12 teachers to get tenure
right.
And to keep tenure. And they wanted to make it both harder to do both and easier to remove tenure. Certainly Rex Sinkfield and the SOMI Institute are strong funders of that particular point of view. It also had some support among African-American legislators concerned about the St. Louis schools, such as Senator Nasheed.
But the tenure provisions were knocked out. So, I mean, it didn't end up dealing with tenure other than the incompetence provision.
Speaking of Sinkfield, Marshall, before the session, if memory serves, there was a lot of talk about his proposal for replacing the state income tax with the state sales tax. Did this just die or not come up? What's the story on that?
Well, it evolved. I think that what they tried to do was at the beginning of the year was a light version of that instead of an all-out switch. This proposal to lower the state's income tax for individuals and corporations and then raise the sales tax a bit. I think that was kind of a lighter version to try to ease that particular issue under the tent, so to speak. And we eventually saw what became of that. The sales tax hike portion was eventually removed from it, and the portion of the bill that just would lower income taxes made it out and is now awaiting the governor's, probably the governor's veto, not his signature. But I do think that particular piece of legislation was probably a lighter version of let's see how much of this issue we can get across, how much we can, sell the idea of, a sales tax overall being a better form of taxation than income tax.
How about online sales tax?
I believe, Joe, you may have to help me on that one. I believe that may have made it in one particular bill.
Yes, it did. I'm pretty sure it did. Hmm. But there's a question. I think there's some other stuff in that bill that the governor may not like, so it's unclear exactly what's going to happen with that one. I'm pretty sure it did make it.
Okay, another issue that got a lot of attention prior to the session, during the session, was the idea of naming our brand-new Mississippi River Bridge after Stan Musial. I gather, lady and gentlemen, that we're going to get half a bridge.
Maybe it'll be Ernie Banks for the other half.
Yeah, and half the Poplar Street Bridge will now become the William Lacy Clay.
William Lacy Clay Sr.
Senior. Exactly, exactly. Well, I did hear this morning, I think, that Governor Quinn was saying, you know, it would be okay with him if it were named, they want Veterans Memorial Bridge, I believe, if it were the Stan Musial Veterans Memorial Bridge. So maybe it'll work out all in the end.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I asked Representative Stream, who was one of the co-sponsors of the bill in the House, you know, what about, you know, naming the bridge after both, you know, since Stan Musial was himself a military veteran. And Rick Stream said, you know, Stan Musial would probably prefer that it be named after veterans, you know, as opposed to himself. But, you know, that perhaps he suggested maybe there could be a compromise in there, naming it the Stan Musial Veterans Memorial Bridge, that maybe that's a way to reach some type of compromise.
Well, that certainly was a lot of discussion over that. one other issue that I want to just put on the table here, I'm surprised that this is only now just being passed here in Missouri. The legislature voted for legislation that you cannot use welfare funds for casinos, strip clubs, or for buying liquor. I'm really quite surprised that isn't already on the book. It wasn't already on the book.
Well, there was some controversy over the liquor provision, and I'm not sure Marshall maybe knows better how the final wording ended up being, because one thing that people pointed out during the floor debate on the House was that while they were okay with banning alcohol purchases, that they thought that people should be allowed to purchase other things in the liquor store, because in some neighborhoods, the liquor store is the only store with anything. So in other words, if you needed to get some milk and maybe there's milk sold in your local liquor store, they could at least get milk. I'm not sure exactly how the ban – there was some debate over that. I'm not sure exactly how that ended, because there was some concern about that.
That's something I'll have to follow up on as well. But you would – but, you know, perhaps if that doesn't get signed into law, maybe they could come back and – or even if it does get signed into law, maybe come back and make some type of carve-out where, say, you know, in neighborhoods where liquor stores are the only store, say – maybe they could be used for only certain items for purchase in those stores, as opposed to anything in a liquor store.
Right.
Only about a minute left. Let me go around the panel and just get a quick cap. Terry, your final thought on this session?
It's not over. We're going to have a very busy September veto session. Joe and Marshall are going to be occupied, and we're going to have a lot of news coming out of it. So we have a very incomplete legislative process this year.
Joe?
I think that the divisions within the Republican ranks, especially in the Senate, and the pressure from the business interests in St. Louis, I think that's going to be an undercurrent over the next year. And I think that could affect some elections, primary elections, especially next year. But I think it also could affect even relations between the governor and business interests and some others. I think that I predict that the RCGA and some other business groups in the St. Louis area are going to be more overtly political, because I think they were concerned about some of the things that happened.
And Marshall, the final word, 15 or 20 seconds.
Okay. My prediction, there will be no special session, but veto session will be longer than one day.
You're really going out on a limb there, Marshall. Good for you. Good for you. We look forward to seeing you here tomorrow, by the way, Marshall Griffin. Thank you so much for being with us. Joe Manis, great to see you again. Thank you so much.
Well,
that's SDLBeacon.org, by the way. And Terry Jones, always great to see you.
Thank you, Don.
Participating. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about hereditary cancers and the use of genetic counseling to guide the decisions to take preventive surgical measures. And then we'll take a look at the dangers facing participants in youth sporting activities and how they can be prevented. A reminder that Marshall Griffin and Joe Manis will be joined by St. Louis Public Radio reporter Chris McDaniel and Beacon reporter Jason Rosenbaum for another look back at the Missouri legislative session. That's happening tomorrow night at 7 in the community room in our UMSL Center here at Grand Center building. That's on Olive. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.